You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Imagine that you've been a major league pitcher who spent a decade in the big leagues. Advancing age meets eroding skills, and that's left your confidence somewhat shaken. And then it happens, a baseball intervention. A mentor, coach, or a fellow player teaches you how to throw an off-speed pitch that has a life of its own, the knuckleball. You undergo a resurgence that extends your career. In a new film co-directed with Ann Sundberg, filmmaker Ricky Stern takes an in-depth look at a pitch that has made a fool of many batters. But despite its effectiveness, there have been only about 80 knuckleball pitchers in all of baseball history. I'm thrilled that two of the greatest, Tim Wakefield and Phil Niekro, join us now, along with Ricky Stern, to discuss a new documentary called Knuckleball, which opened last Friday at the IFC Theater in Greenwich Village. Welcome to you all.
Well, thanks. Thanks for having us.
Nice to see
Ricky,
you.
Did your colleagues think it odd when you and Ann decided to focus a documentary on a specific pitch in a specific sport?
Yes. We have definitely gotten comments, you know, how do you go from doing Joan Rivers or a film about Darfur to a film about the knuckleball? And I would have to say we got a treatment about the film, a written one page about it from a Christine Schomer and Dan Kogan, who wrote it. And we fell in love with the characters, these guys who throw this pitch, because they're outliers in baseball. They're guys who are pursuing their dreams against all odds to stay in the major leagues. And that was something that we thought everyone could relate to.
And you could also fall in love with the pitch because it's unlike anything else in the sport. Phil, can you walk us through the mechanics of a knuckleball?
Gee, I don't know about walking it through the mechanics. I'd probably have to have the baseball and have someone, you know, right there on the pitcher's mound with a catcher and going through the, you know, the mechanics of it. It's hard to describe how you throw that thing. You just got to get out there and have someone with you that knows something about throwing a knuckleball, and then you can learn. But it's like Tim and I said, we get a lot of letters in the mail. You know, write me back, tell me how to throw a knuckleball. I can't do that. You know, so it takes time and a commitment to throw it.
But the basic idea is that you don't hold the ball across the seams the way you would with a fastball or a curveball. You kind of push it toward the plate.
Yeah, the whole premise behind a knuckleball is it's thrown without any spin. You know, naturally, baseball throw pitchers try to put as much spin as possible on a baseball, a fastball, slider, curve. You're trying to control the spin of the baseball. With a knuckleball, it's thrown without any spin.
And what does not having spin do, Phil?
We've been trying to figure it out for years and years.
Because I would think it would just come in straight, but instead it flutters like a butterfly.
Well, there's no rotation on the ball. And I've heard the ball is hitting the air pockets or trying to find the easiest way to home plate. But I think a lot of people try to research that and really can't give me a good observation or good philosophy of why a knuckleball does what it does. Because it never does the same thing twice. Never.
Which, of course, is a problem not only for the pitcher and the catcher especially, but also the batter.
Absolutely.
And that's what makes it so hard to hit. It's also a very slow pitch. How does it compare, its speed compare to other off-speed pitches?
Well, I threw mine at 65 miles an hour, and I think Phil threw his around the same speed. R.A., obviously pitching for the Mets, throws his a little bit harder.
And maybe the hardest of any knuckleball pitcher.
Yeah, it is the hardest of any knuckleball pitcher. Like Phil says, we threw ours as hard as R.A. It just never got to the plate as quick as he did. But, I mean, we both wish we could throw ours that hard. I just was never blessed with the arm strength to throw it at 80 miles an hour. And then I was, you know, dealt with the cards that I got and tried to make it work.
But you still had to throw it hard enough to get it to go across the plate.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, some people throw as hard as they can, and the ball bounces before it reaches home plate.
That's part
of the trick here, isn't it?
I could probably throw it as hard as R.A., but it's not going to have any effect as mine would do if I backed off into it 65 or 70.
Well, your brother Joe was suspended for scuffing up the ball, and there were rumors that some pretty great pitchers use variants of the spitball throughout their careers. Should the knuckleball be included in the same category with them as a trick pitch?
I don't think it's a trick pitch. A lot of people think it is. It's a pitch that all of us who threw knuckleballs realize that was the pitch that we're going to get batters out and he could get it to the big leagues. And it got us there, and we stayed with it.
And it's not illegal as the
No, it's not illegal. I don't think it's a freaky or funky pitch like a lot of people say. It's something that we made a living with. We got paid every 2 weeks for throwing this one particular pitch to a batter and got him out in the big leagues, and we were successful with it.
Now, Tim, why is it that most knuckleball pitchers don't start out throwing the pitch?
Because in today's society, it's all about the bravado or the brawn or the strength. Everybody wants to throw 90 to 95 to 100 miles an hour, and I think scouts aren't going to look at a kid that maybe throws 70 miles an hour with a knuckleball. I mean, he's not going to get a chance to sign or live out his dream as playing in the big league. So hopefully this film will bring a lot of hope to those skinny kids, the non-athletic guys that can't throw 95 miles an hour. And if they can learn a knuckleball at a young age, they can live out their dream.
And that's what the scouts are looking for. So somebody who can throw the ball in the 90 mile per hour
Unfortunately,
range.
Unfortunately, yeah.
Has anybody ever started off as a knuckleballer?
He's the only
in,
one.
High school, grade, yeah. Grade
You're the
school,
only one? Because most people come to it late.
I described my father taught that to me in the backyard in Ohio, and I pitched 4 years of high school and a couple of years of American Legion ball. Went to a tryout camp with the Milwaukee Braves. I was a 18-year-old kid, threw a knuckleball. They took a chance at me. They weren't looking for a knuckleball pitcher. Scouts are out there looking for the guys that throw 90s, but if they do run into a guy who's got a pretty good knuckleball at a pretty young age, they'll say, oh, well, let's take a shot at him.
I've always wondered whether somebody who could throw the ball in the 90s also threw a knuckleball, whether that wouldn't totally freak out the batters.
I'm sure it would.
But nobody's ever done that.
I think that would totally freak out the catcher, too. I mean, at least he's got a chance at 65 miles an hour. If you're throwing a knuckleball at 90, heads up to the people that's sitting behind the home plate there.
In a given game, Tim, what percentage of pitchers that you threw were knuckleballs?
I threw mine 90% of the time. I fully had to commit to being a knuckleball pitcher, and I didn't really want to be that pitcher that threw a knuckleball. I was a knuckleball pitcher, so my primary pitch was a knuckleball, and out of 100 pitches I threw, 90 of them were knuckleballs.
And the other 10 were fastballs because you were behind
in the count? I don't know if you call it a
count.
Fastball. It was 78 to 80 miles an hour, but it was, you know, as a knuckleball pitcher, your off speed is something faster.
Well, you could. Did you ever throw a curve?
High school, I did. No, being a knuckleball pitcher, you're either a knuckleball pitcher or you're not. It's not a knuckleball isn't the pitch that you throw with three or four other pitches. You throw the knuckleball and you mix something in there once in a while. Like Tim said, he throws 90%. I remember pitching one game against the Reds. I threw 108 pitches and threw 106 knuckleballs. But most of the time,
and
it's probably 90%.
Why didn't you throw those other two knuckleballs?
I don't know, maybe I got behind on somebody with a pitcher. We had a big lead. And every once in a while you throw something just to say, hey, that guy's got another pitch. Maybe I better start looking for something else.
Well, I've spoken to other pitchers about why you seem to throw exactly the same three times in a row and you get a strike and then the other two are somewhere else, you know. And it all has to do with mechanics, they'll say, and release point. Does that apply to a knuckleball?
Absolutely. I think it does. It's like trying to tell a golfer you have the same swing, but you hit one down the middle and the next two are don't find the green or don't find the fairway. I mean, it's a feel for us. It's how the ball comes out of your hand. And, you know, we can start it at a certain height. Like Ari talks about throwing it at a certain height to present to the hitter that it's going to be inside the strike zone. But once it leaves our hand, it pretty much has a mind of its own.
My guests are Tim Wakefield and Phil Niekro and Ricky Stern. We're talking about a new film called Knuckleball, which opened last week at the IFC Center. Your brother, Phil, was when he got in trouble, he said he was just using that file to keep his fingernails in shape for throwing the knuckleball. They said that he was scuffing up the ball. But what do you have to do with – do you have to be better manicured than other pitchers?
Well, we take care of our fingernails, that's for sure. I mean, that's our paycheck, our two fingernails. But, you know, when you get back, and a lot of people ask me about that fingernail file or that emery board in my brother's pocket that he threw out of his pocket in Minnesota and got suspended for 2 weeks. And I keep telling people, put yourself on the mound and you've got 40,000 people watching. You've got five TV cameras around you. You got four umpires around you and a first base coach and third base coach. And that fingernail or that emery board is in your back pocket. someone explained to me how you could take the fingernail file out of there on the mound and scuff the ball up and get it back in your pocket without nobody seeing it. It can't be done.
But people suggested that you were very effective at throwing a spitter and not getting caught.
I never threw a spitter in
my
life.
You never did?
No, I threw the knuckleballs. I didn't need a spitter. At least I never got caught if I did throw one. I was too afraid to throw one. I was too scared of getting caught, so I didn't need it.
Some did some pretty great pitches. Don Drysdale seems to have thrown a spitter and gotten away with it. And,
he
was a guy who could throw the ball 95 miles an hour.
I heard about the spitter, but I never knew about it. In my generation of baseball, nobody really threw it anymore.
Now, catchers hate knuckleball pitchers, don't they? Because they got to have a special mitt and they never know where the ball's going to come.
If you got a catcher that works with you well, knows you, it's kind of like a connection there, and you get along great. And he likes to catch the ball. He will call it. Then you got something going. Some catchers are afraid to death of it. Will not call it.
Mm-hmm. No, I had one of the best for almost 8 years. As Doug Marabelli, we traded him away to San Diego, and then the new guy that we had didn't fare too well, and we had to trade for Doug to come back, and there was a big story. He got a police escort from the airport to the stadium. He dressed in his uniform in the cop car and then walked out on the field and caught my first inning, and we ended up winning that game, so it was phenomenal. But Doug was very good at catching a knuckleball.
So what does it mean to a pitcher? You just trust this the catcher?
Yeah, it's
to catch a pitch that somebody else might have trouble with?
It's a sense of trust. Once you find a guy that kind of gels with you the correct way and is very confident in calling knuckleball, that catches it well, it's confident in himself that, hey, I don't care if there's no outs and a runner on third, I'm going to call a knuckleball because I'm confident that I can catch it or at least knock it down where the run can't score.
Well in those games where you threw 90 knuckleballs and 10 other pitches, did the catcher call for it? Did the catcher call for those two times that you threw a fastball, Phil?
Well, basically, a catcher never tells you what to throw. He's making a suggestion to you. He puts a sign down. He's asking, do you want to throw this pitch or not?
And then you shake him off?
You shake him off or say yes or no or give him some kind of a glove sign to go to a different sign. But most of the catchers, I know mine, Bruce Benedict and Marabella with Tim, they pretty much do how we thought out there. And very, very, very seldom did I ever shake off my catcher.
My guests are Phil Niekro and Tim Wakefield, two of the surviving knuckleball pitchers in the world today. Only one is actually playing this year. Ari Dickey, who was a guest on the show a couple of months ago when his memoir came out. We're talking about a film that is fascinating because actually, when we come back, I want to talk about filming the pitch itself. In the film, we do see how a knuckleball works, and it's kind of stunning to watch it move out of the pitcher's hand across the plate into the catcher's glove. Usually that's what you hope anyway. Ricky Stern is here. She and Ann Sundberg directed this film, which opened last Friday at the IFC Theater in Greenwich Village. We're back with filmmaker Ricky Stern, who with Ann Sundberg has made a film called Knuckleball, and it's about the three living knuckleball pitchers, Phil Niekro, Tim Wakefield, and R.A. Dickey. It opened last Friday at the IFC Theater in Greenwich Village on Avenue of the Americas. And I asked Phil to explain how a knuckleball is thrown, and he said it's really hard. But you show it in the film, don't you?
Yeah, it was very important for us to feature the knuckleball as its own character. So we really wanted to film it in slow motion so that we could capture it, because you hear that it's called spooky in the film, and you hear from all the catchers how difficult it is to catch. We really wanted to capture it. We flew down to Florida right after Tim finished the season, and we had built a glass box, essentially, to put our camera in, and we shot it with a high-speed camera at like 1,000 frames per second, and it required a 50-pound piece of glass to sit in front of the camera that was supposed to be shatterproof, except when I got the FedEx box, it looked like a pear and it was shattered. And we had about an hour to locate more glass and you know, we found it. And then, you know, the thing is that the knuckleball pitch, it's not a straightforward pitch. So it may be high and then kind of dip down right where the plate is. And so it was very hard to actually keep it in the frame, keep it in focus. It took a lot of challenges. And then when the guys warm up and they start pitching, they really only want to stay warm for a certain amount of time. And so it was a lot of trial and error, but we captured it.
Did you also feel pressure because Tim was retiring?
Well, we didn't know. Tim will tell you. In February, the day he retired was essentially the day we all found out he was retiring. So I think it was up to the last minute when no one really knew.
When you saw the film and you saw the way the pitch actually looked in slow motion, were you at all surprised? Or do you know when it leaves your hand just what it looks like?
Well, I wasn't surprised because I've thrown it so much, so I had a pretty good idea what was going to do when it left the pitcher's hand. The thing I was impressed with the movie, of course, is how it was done. And I don't know how much time was put into it, but I'm sure a lot of hours. But if I've never saw a knuckleball before, never saw a knuckleball throw it, if I'm watching that movie documentary for the first time, I'm going to learn something about a pitch that no one's probably... They've heard of it, but didn't know much about it, didn't know the ups and downs, know what pitches go to throw it. In this movie, shows me that, you know, I don't have to be a 95-mile-an-hour pitcher or throw the ball 90. Maybe I can get to the big leagues if I learn this by learning how to throw a knuckleball. You know, I did it, and Tim did it, and R.A. did it, and Charlie Huff did it. And I think a lot of boys and hopefully young girls will say, I'm going to take a shot at that. And if we get some young people out there in this country starting to throw knuckleballs, then the legend of the knuckleball will live.
Well, many of the knuckleballers throughout baseball history have been effective. Some have had real control problems, and we can get into that in a moment. But Hoyt Wilhelm, for example, is in the Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. Why do you think more people don't attempt it? Is it just so hard to throw to?
Obviously, the obvious reason is it's not that easy to throw. The second one is that not a lot of people trust it or have the patience to coach it or manage it. You know, that's one thing about the film that depicts our careers was we were always the sixth man in a rotation. We were always the 26th man on a 25-man roster. You know, we've always been that, you know, that guy that's been pushed to the side like as an insurance policy for anybody else that might fail. And we can bring so much value to a pitching staff because we can start, we can relieve, we can mop up, we can do every asset, and it doesn't put that much strain on our arms. We stay healthy all year round. We can give a club multiple innings in every facet of pitching, and you know, still it's one of those things that's not trusted.
And a couple of Hoyt Wilhelm was pitching. Yeah. Into his
49, 40, almost 49.
50 years old.
Phil, you were 48.
I can't ever remember looking back and knowing or remembering of a knuckleball pitcher that had arm surgery, Tommy John surgery, elbow surgery, shoulder surgery. We just don't get them. And yeah. Maybe we got problems up there, but in our school, we just go and throw.
Well, sometimes you get a split fingernail, and that could be a real problem.
That could be a problem.
Now, Ricky, Ari Dickey is the only knuckleballer currently playing, and he probably would have won 20 games by now if the Mets were giving him more run support. But he was a perfect example of somebody who had real problems when he first tried using it in a major league game. Can you tell us a bit about his false start with the Texas Rangers that you cover in the film?
Yeah, I mean, R.A. would tell you that it took turning to the knuckleball and then getting support from someone like Charlie Huff, turning to these guys who have thrown it to really get guidance. And that's the thing that I think the film captures, which is unique in pro sports, is that there's a fraternity, a small fraternity of guys, and they really do turn to each other. I'm sure Phil and Tim could talk about how Phil mentored Tim, and Tim has mentored R.A.
Now, you're helping a player who is on a competing team. Does it matter?
That didn't bother me.
Is it that you're all knuckleballers?
We have such a close-knit bond in our brotherhood or our fraternity, whatever you want to call it, that regardless of, I mean, you walked a fine line as you didn't want to give him too much help. But you wanted them to do well. But, you know, I mean, for us as knuckleballers, when we run into problems, we really don't have anybody to turn to but each other. I mean, I can't ask my pitching coach, hey, what do you see here? Because he's never thrown it. But you know, you talk to somebody like Phil or his brother Joe or Charlie or Tom Candiotti who have walked in the shoes that you're walking in now.
What would you ask him?
I just say, hi,
Phil, I'm having a problem right now.
Yeah.
I can't get the ball over the plate.
Like, can you come see me? Can you come watch me throw? Let me send you some videotape and see what you see. I feel like the ball's not doing what I want it to do. I'm not taking the spin off it right. And immediately, you know, they could see what the problem was and correct it.
And was it always very obvious, Phil?
Sometimes maybe one knuckleballer has a little different opinion from another knuckleball compared to what this knuckleball pitcher is having a problem with. But we sit down, we talk it out, and we watch film, and we go in the bullpen, and we throw. And I get behind the pitcher, I get behind the catcher, I look from the east and the west, the north and south. And there's usually something in there that maybe that pitcher don't realize he's not doing that he should be doing. And I've been in that position before. You know, someone helped me here with the Braves, and my pitching coaches couldn't help me. So when I ran to Charlie Helfer, my brother Joe, or Charlie Helfer, or those guys back in those days, they could give me a pretty good idea what I was doing wrong.
Now, most knuckleball pitchers started off, with the exception of someone like you, Phil, started off as pitchers of a different sort. But, Tim, you played infield before
you
became a pitcher.
Yeah, I was actually drafted by the Pittsburgh Pirates as a first baseman. You know, I hit 40 home runs in the 3 years I was in college and was drafted in the eighth round in 1988 and, you know, spent about a year and a half in the minor leagues where I couldn't hit anymore. I tell people I was allergic to wood because we went from aluminum bats to wood. But, you know, you get to a different level of competition, and I just couldn't make the adjustments. And, you know, ultimately the knuckleball found me. It was something that I goofed off with as a kid. And luckily I was throwing it that day to another first baseman before a game. And my manager, his name's Woody Heike, walked behind me and saw me and said, hey, that's pretty good. And, you know, later that summer, they were going to release me when the season was over with, and he spoke up on my behalf and said, hey, I see something very special in this kid, and before we tell him to go home, we need to bring him back to instructional league and see where this takes us.
But a lot of knuckleball pitchers are people who just played with the pitch, you know, didn't take it seriously, loved to fool around with it, whether they were position players or pitchers who at that time were relying on the fastball and curve.
Right. And
or Jim Bouton, who wanted to make a comeback.
Yeah, you resurrect his career. And it's a, you know, you'll see in the film, it's a pitch that's born out of desperation. You know, it was a pitch that helped me, you know, save my career save my dream that I wanted to be a major league player. And Charlie Huff was a conventional guy. R.A. was conventional. Candy, all of them. If you go through the whole list of all the knuckleballers, most of them were conventional guys that had to turn to the knuckleball to keep their careers alive. Jim Bouton's a fabulous story about that. And, you know, hopefully we're trying to discredit the born out of desperation pitch. It is somebody, hopefully an organization sees a kid in high school that throws a good knuckleball. Maybe he can get drafted and then get to the big leagues.
Ricky, when you were researching this film, did you find out when the knuckleball first started being used?
Well, it was there's a kind of controversy around it, but I think we traced it to the early 1900s, late 18. These guys probably would know better than we would. But we had about 70. I think it's estimated at 70 knuckleball pitchers have made it in the major leagues.
We talked about that in the car the other day. It's like, who invented the knuckleball? Like, who was the wise guy that went up there and go?
Because it's such a strange pitch.
It is. Like, who thought it? Like, I'm going to hold a ball like this, and I'm going to throw it without any spin. And, wow, that was cool. Let's try to do that again. Yeah. Like, who? I'd like to find out and do some research. I know you were going to call the Hall and see if they could find out who actually threw the first knuckleball in professional baseball.
Don't know. Well, I can go. I think there was Washington Senators years ago had four knuckleballers
during World War on one
staff. Now before those guys, I have no idea who was throwing it before them. And you ask walk down the street baseball fans and say tell me give me 10 fastball pitchers but they'll rattle pitchers off. Now, name me 10 knuckleball pitchers ever pitched the game. They'll go about 3 or 4 or 5, and that's about all they can come up with. Hmm. So it is a rarity pitch, and it's special.
Despite the fact that you pitched a no-hitter, I don't know how many knuckleballs in that game. Didn't you?
It wasn't the best game I ever had. It was just some good defensive plays. We made a lot, scored a lot of runs, and when I got 2 outs at the top of the 8th inning, top of the 9th, I'm saying, oh, I got a chance to pitch a no-hitter. One more guy, and I got it. But, you don't go out there to pitch a no-hitter. You just go out there and pitch the best you can, win the ball game.
Well, when a knuckleball is really on, it looks like Ari Dickey has come close 2 or 3 times this year.
Yeah.
Although it wound up that Johan Santana is the one who actually pitched the questionable
no-hitter. And that's what's funny about it. And that's what's funny about it is that Ari goes back-to-back complete game shutouts. Johan Santana throws a no-hitter, and Ari's back-to-back shutouts gets overshadowed by a no-hitter. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the thing that I think that we all through our whole careers have tried to combat, that the knuckleball is a legitimate pitch and should be taken very seriously.
So I think we have figured out that nobody knows what the knuckleball is going to do. But you have to know something because you got to throw strikes.
Well, that's a good question. And people say, can you control the knuckleball, Nico? I say, yep. I can throw that thing over the plate 7 out of 10 times. Because the knuckleball never does the same thing twice. You could throw it the same way, hold it the same way, and it'll do something different. So I think that's a big mystery as to people in baseball or physics or people in science. Why does a thing do something different every time you throw it? And basically you throw it the same way, you grip it the same way. Fastballs, usually pretty straight, right on the target. Curveballs are curveballs. They can hit outside corners with them, pitch after pitch. Slider ball pitch, you can hit the outside corner. Most of the time, pitch after pitch after pitch. Knuckleball, throw it 10 times, it'll do 10 different times. 10 different things it'll do.
Sure.
Did you ever throw a curve?
A little rinky-dinky high school roundhouse curve, but in the big leagues, no.
They would have hit your curve.
Probably. They hit everything else but a knuckleball. They hit the knuckleball.
You were going to say something.
I was going to say, Charlie Huff says it takes a day to learn the knuckleball and it takes a lifetime to learn how to throw it for strikes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Very well said.
Very well said, yeah.
And is that what happened with you, Tim? When did you realize that you were in the groove? Well, most of the time.
I never realized that I was in the groove. I was constantly fighting myself and always trying to be better. You know, when I first started, I got to the big leagues within 3 years, and I pitched the Pittsburgh Pirates to the postseason against the Atlanta Braves, and then the next 2 years I found myself in the minor leagues again, and it wasn't until I got actually released by the Pirates, signed by the Red Sox, and it wasn't until I got to work with Phil and his brother Joe down in Fort Myers that I really, finally figured out, I couldn't talk to anybody. What am I doing wrong? Like, I'm struggling. I'm getting my butt kicked in double A ball. And until I met with them and they kind of got my confidence back to hey, you really need to, this is going to be your life. You need to eat, sleep, drink knuckleballs. And until you commit to that, you'll eventually figure it out.
Well, we have Ari Dickey, another example. As we mentioned earlier, his first game, he was just he really had a terrible game. And then later, after he has been released by a number of teams, doesn't make the Mets, he pitches a near-perfect game for the Buffalo Bisons, mm-hmm. and finally gets called up to the majors. And suddenly it's a revelation.
Yeah. That's kind of how I started, too. You know, I was in AAA and ended up throwing – I was 8-3 at one point, and all of a sudden, all these other guys kept getting called up before me. Like, I had a better record, a better ERA than all these guys, and like 2 or 3 guys got called up ahead of me until finally they didn't have a choice but to call me up and was able to pitch well.
Were there some batters who just were better at hitting the knuckleball than others? Were they the free swingers?
Yeah, for me, Billy Buckner, for me. And the only reason I could figure it out, because I knew when he came to the plate that his objective was to get to first base. He didn't care how he did that. And I might have struck him out one time if that many over the years, but I think if more players went to the plate with the approach that, how am I going to get to first base and get there, and the next guy does that same thing, you'd have a lot, probably more runs scored, and the pitchers would be in a lot more trouble, probably.
See, Tim, if you'd understood that, you'd be still playing first base.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Were there some batters who were particularly tough for you?
Usually the contact type of guys. I really had a
You mean the ones who swing late because they're just trying to beat the ball?
Like he said, they're trying to just get on first base. The leadoff hitters, the first or second hitters, or the eighth or ninth hitters in the lineup. The big home run hitters I love facing because they swing really hard. They had these big long swings, and every time when the knuckleball got to the plate, it would miss their bat every single time.
So are you being contacted, either of you, by young pitchers who want to master the pitch?
In the mail. I get a lot of stuff in the mail, phone calls once in a while when they get a hold of me. A lot of guys a few guys in independent leagues are on their last leg wanting to learn how to knuckleball. They'll call me and try and get something together, but not too many. I think there's a lot of guys out there in minor league baseball, college, high school, that could become knuckleball pitchers. They just don't know where to go to get the help.
Yeah, I get the same thing. I get some fall. We have a kid in the Red Sox minor league organization that we just traded for. His name's Stephen Wright. He had finished up the year in AAA in Pawtucket, Rhode Island. It might be the next knuckleballer to come to the big leagues and be successful.
And I suspect, Ricky, that this film is going to inspire some young pitchers or older pitchers to attempt to learn the knuckleball.
We've already gotten emails from people saying that either they have a son who's a knuckleball pitcher or they themselves are trying to resurrect a career and pitch the knuckleball. And could we put them in touch with our knuckleball guys because they're looking for mentorship?
Ricky Stern and Ann Sundberg directed the film called Knuckleball. And it features some pretty great knuckleballers. Two of the greatest have been with me today, Phil Niekro and Tim Wakefield. Thank you all so much for being on our show.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.